4433. Read it for yourself.
Or as realtor.
Welcome, everyone, to the House Committee on Human Services and Housing. Today is April 11th, 2017. Going to open a work session on House Bill 3155 for the purpose of carrying it over to Thursday, April 13th at 8 a.m. We are waiting on new amendments. That is the Task Force on Surplus Public Lands for Housing by Representative Brock Smith. So close the work session on House Bill 3155. Going to open a work session on House Bill 2903. It's Representative Olson's bill modifying the definition of abuse in child care agency. We actually have a dash 3 that has nothing to do with definition of child abuse. It has to do with off-ramps and other things. But we are waiting on paperwork. So we are going to carry that over till April 13th at 8 a.m. And I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2903. Going to open a work session on House Bill 2210, Representative Viles, grants to owners of rentals to rehabilitate affordable rentals. Representative Lyle, why don't you come up here while Cassie reads the summary of what we're going to do.
House Bill 2210 directs Housing and Community Services to develop and implement the Retaining Affordable Rental Housing Program to provide grants for rehabilitation and maintenance of multifamily rental housing at an affordable rental rate. The bill requires OHCS to administer and monitor the program in areas without a housing authority or enter into agreements with local housing authorities to administer and monitor the program. The bill creates the Retaining Affordable Housing Rental Housing Program Fund and continuously appropriates money to OHCS for the program. We do have a dash 2, and the dash 2 replaces sections 1 and 2 and directs Housing and Community Services to develop and implement the Retaining Affordable Rental Housing Program to provide financial assistance to owners of multifamily rental housing for rehabilitation and maintenance of affordable of housing at an affordable rental rate, and requires OHCS to make forgivable loans to landowners of eligible multifamily rental housing and develop an application process for the loans. The amendment allows OHCS to forgive 10% of the loan each year the landlord or the landowner rents units for an affordable rental rate, and requires OHCS and the landowner to enter into a contract specifying the purpose of the loan, execution of written instruments, and payment of loan used in violation of the contract.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Rich Vile, House District 26. These dash 2 amendments were provided to us by folks clearly smarter than I am. And the primary thing that they did is put this into HCSD rather than the individual housing authorities around the state. I think that's going to make for a more uniform program. And by making it a loan rather than an outright grant, it imposes upon the landlords, the owners of the property, a little bit more discipline in making sure that these properties stay in the program. That's all. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes. Yeah, so if you do a loan, then if for some reason they decide to not be affordable anymore, you're not in this in the bad position of having given a grant and then having to try to claw it back. So it's a good way to go. It was a friendly amendment. Thank you very much for working with Housing and Community Services on that.
Thank you very much
for bringing this bill forward. Right. I'm ready.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the dash 2 amendments dated April 4th, 2017.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the dash 2 amendments dated April 4th, 2017. Is there any discussion?
There's no fiscal on this, so I wish that that we had fiscals on some of these bills that are obvious fiscal bills, you know. So,
yeah.
That's frustrating. So.
It is frustrating, and part of that is because we don't know how many landlords out there will take advantage of that. It is true that this could be capped, and that could be something that would be considered in the next time around. We'd say, you know, the first however many get it up to a certain amount. But I think that's why they did that at this point. Okay, any other discussion on this? Any objection to the amendment? Seeing none, amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2210 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 2210 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion? Further discussion on the bill itself? All right, seeing none, clerk, please call the roll.
Representative
Representative Corson?
Yes.
Representative Bean?
Aye.
Representative
Newman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Excused.
Representative Lewison?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Kinnear? Aye. Motion passes. Thank you, Representative Vile. Okay, I'm going to open a work session. So I close the work session on House Bill 2210. See, Representative Nathanson is here. We will open a work session on House Bill 3262. Representative Nathanson, do you have any? Would you like to come up? Okay, so Kathy, could you please remind us?
She just wants to make sure that we do this right.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We're on our best behavior here.
House Bill 3262 requires Department of Human Services, in collaboration with other agencies, to adopt rules related to prescription of psychotropic medicine to an elderly person or a person with disability living in an adult foster home, residential care, or long-term care facility. The bill specifies rule requirements, including review of prescribing multiple psychotropic medicines, engagement in other interventions prior to prescription of psychotropic medication, and continued intervention in conjunction with prescribed psychotropic medication. The bill declares an emergency effective upon passage. We do have a dash one. The dash one redefines primary care physician to be expanded to a provider, gerontologist, or psychiatrist, or other licensed healthcare practitioner designated by Department of Human Services. We have the fiscal, and it is minimal, and there is no revenue impact.
Okay. So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 15th, 2017.
Vice Chair Olson moves to adopt the Dash 1 amendments dated March 15th, 2017. Any discussion on the amendment? Okay. Any objection? Seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3262 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Vice Chair Olson moves House Bill 3262 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, please call the roll.
Representative Corson?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Excused.
Representative Pinson?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Hi. Representative Nathanson, would you like to carry the measure? Thank you. Okay, great. Going to close the work session on House Bill 3262. Open a work session on House Bill 2221. Doug Briggs, please come up. And Cassie, could you please remind us of this bill?
House Bill 2221 directs Oregon Health Authority and Department of Consumer and Business Services to report to the Legislative Assembly each calendar quarter on implementation of child abuse medical assessments, including reimbursements, number of grievances, and consumer complaints 30 days after the effective date. The bill requires OHA to pay 9% interest rate on late child abuse medical assessment reimbursements to community assessment centers and declares an emergency effective on passage. We last heard this bill on February 9th and discussed payment of child abuse medical assessments and reimbursement. We do have a dash 3 amendment. The dash 3 amendment requires OHA to report to the Legislative Assembly every 12 months and requires OHA to immediately report to the Joint Ways and Committee on Ways and Means of any instance of insufficient funds in a coordinated care organization's budget to reimburse child abuse medical assessments. The bill requires Department of Consumer and Business Services to report failure of implementation or enforcement of enforced reimbursement of child abuse medical assessments. The bill requires OHA to ensure the Community Assessment Center is reimbursed by the CCO for child abuse medical assessments conducted on a child enrolled in a CCO and removes the OHA requirement to adopt billing and payment mechanisms. The amendment specifies requirements for full reimbursement of the child abuse medical assessment cost and requires the CCO to report to OHA on any claims for reimbursement not paid. We have a fiscal, and the fiscal is indeterminate, and the revenue has no impact.
Okay.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Doug Riggs, and I will be brief. Last time we were here, I brought a large bear to signify the children who could not be here today who were being abused. thought about reading the verse today, but I decided not to. But on the way into the building, I walked by the trees with the ribbons and all the pinwheels. And I thought about taking a pinwheel, but I didn't want to take a pinwheel that represented one of the children who's been abused. This is Child Abuse Prevention Month, and I feel very bad that we're here again trying to explain what really ought to be a very simple bill. And although the fiscal that you have in front of you is indeterminate, I think it's also flat-out wrong, and I'm very disappointed in the OHA. So what I tried to do is be the DHA. This is the Doug Health Authority. Using my great expertise, I'm not guaranteeing you that my fiscal estimate is accurate, but I think it's more accurate than what is listed in the OHA's fiscal. So I'll just run this by you. We're talking about a very small amount of money, and we're spending an awful lot of energy trying to get help for children in this state. We passed a bill in 2009, Carley's Law, trying to get help for kids. We passed 2234 in the last session trying to get help for kids, and we're here yet again trying to get help for children who are being abused. So assuming we have a 30% increase in the number of kids who might be seen at a cost of $1,500 total per kid, that's $4.5 million. But 60% or thereabouts of our centers already have contracts that basically cover these costs. So we're really talking about 40% of the cost, and that's $1.8 million. I think OHA flipped the Medicaid match in their estimate. They added the Medicaid match to the total cost. The Medicaid match would take away from the total cost. It would subsidize 64% of that total cost. So what you end up with on my sheet is about a $648,000 general fund cost. The average, I'm estimating the average that we'll probably negotiate a rate at would be 80% of that, you know, total cost. That's about what, you know, we've been happy with that 80% cost. That brings it down to $518,000 divided by 2 years is $259,000 total, we estimate, in the first biennium. It probably is less because the major CCOs in the Portland and the Salem area already have contracts. So if you take out the majority of the kids who are already covered by a contract, we're talking about less. That $259,000 is less than the lifetime cost of child abuse to one child. Less than the cost, lifetime cost of one child, which could be up to $400,000 in trauma, lack of education, workforce, healthcare costs. Divided by 16 CCOs, that's $16,200 per CCO per year. I do not think that that amount is too much to pay for preventing child abuse. If that's one kid, if it's 1,000 kids, it's 3,000 kids. So I really appreciate your indulgence here today. I hope we can get this bill sent down to Ways and Means, and I hope that we can work with LFO and the Ways and Means Committee to straighten this fiscal out. You know, we're talking about, you know, children who are the most vulnerable in our society, and this is Child Abuse Prevention Month. And so, again, I really appreciate your indulgence today, and hope we send this bill down to Ways and Means.
Thank you. Madam Chair, and members of the committee, for the record, Allison Kelly, the CEO of Liberty House, the Child Abuse Assessment Center serving Marion and Polk Counties, and I'm also the chair of the statewide network representing 21 centers in the state. Two very short points. One is the reason for this bill is to ensure sufficient revenue so that the centers in the state can employ the necessary medical providers to have on staff when they need assessment, and that will help DHS and law enforcement understand what's in front of them. Accurate assessment is crucial. There is an emergency clause in the bill, and I would suggest that's not hyperbole. Just this week at one of the centers in the state, a case was staffed, a child presented at an emergency room, a child under the age of 7, covered from head to toe with bruises. I've seen the pictures. Far worse than Carly ever had, including bruises from the chin all the way down to the neck. There was no skin. There was only bruising. The staff at the time, the medical staff, who did not have that specialized training and assessment, determined that there was no cause to be concerned about abuse. And that was a medical record on the record that then ties the hands of DHS. This is an emergency. The need for proper medical assessment is real, and that is why we have between 25 and 30 children in the state of Oregon die every year. It's not just because of DHS. It's because we have to provide the right information in the right system, and that's these centers. So speaking as a lawyer who's had, I've worked on complex public policy issues in the state of Oregon for almost 20 years, great-granddaughter of a former governor, I suggest to you that this is one of those issues when we have to stop saying, is it us and them, and is it going to cost too much money? I think this is one of those issues where we come together with OHA and all the other providers and say, let's be we. How can we work together to properly fund the system so that we can staff those centers and get the right help to the right kids in the right time in the right way? Thank you.
Thank you very much for bringing this back in a very real way, given that we heard it almost 2 months ago. It's been a long time. I know you've been working on this very hard. It's appropriate that we're making a decision on it during Child Abuse Prevention Month. Any questions for them? Okay.
Thank you. So, Madam Chair, I move to adopt the Dash 3 amendments dated April 5th, 2017.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the Dash 3 amendment dated April 5th, 2017. Any discussion on the amendment? Any objection? All right, seeing none, the amendment is adopted.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2221 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2221 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? All right. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Bench?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Representative Noble?
Excused.
Representative Palooza?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Yes.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. The motion carries. The bill, what did I say? The bill carries. Okay. Great. Thank you. I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2221 and open a work session on House Bill 3398. Cassie, please remind us of that bill.
House Bill 3398 appropriates $150,000 from the General Fund to Department of Human Services to fund the Hunger Task Force. The bill declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017. The fiscal is $150,000, and there is no revenue impact. And we do have a sub-referral to Ways and Means.
Okay.
Okay, Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3398 to the floor with a due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 3398 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Committee on Ways and Means by prior reference. Any discussion on this bill? All right, seeing none. Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Gorsuch?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Nierman?
Aye.
Excuse.
Representative
Paluso? Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair
Olson? Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair
Pinkett? Aye. Motion passes. Okay. Close the work session on House Bill 3398. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2170, Representative Stark's ombudsman bill. Let's have Cassie read the summary, and we'll have you make some statements. And if you would like to call up Fred Steele, I see in the audience, or anyone else, welcome to do so.
House Bill 2170 establishes the Office of Oregon Ombudsman, consisting of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, Residential Facilities Ombudsman, Foster Parent Ombudsman, Foster Child Ombudsman, and the Oregon Public Guardian and Conservator. The bill specifies appointment procedures for the Office of Oregon Ombudsman and establishes duties for ombudsmen, including administration, program coordination, contracting with advocates, and appointment of support staff. The bill specifies requirements for the foster child and foster parent ombudsman, including provision of information regarding rights, investigation of complaints, collaboration with stakeholders, resource assistance, and establishes a hotline. The bill requires the foster child ombudsman and the foster parent ombudsman to report findings and recommendations of investigation to the foster child or foster parent. The bill declares an emergency effective on passage. We do have a dash one. The dash one replaces the bill and establishes the Office of the Oregon Ombudsman, which includes the offices of the Long-Term Care Ombudsman, Residential Facilities Ombudsman, Foster Parent Ombudsman, Foster Child Ombudsman, and Oregon Public Guardian. The bill establishes the offices that were just listed to provide services and information regarding rights, investigations, inquiries, help with processes for engagement with other stakeholders, and to work with stakeholders to identify and solve problems. This becomes operative January 1st, 2018. The amendment also establishes 5-member advisory committees for the Foster Child Ombudsman, Foster Parent Ombudsman, Residential Facilities Ombudsman, and the Public Guardian, or Oregon Public Guardian, and establishes the Office of Oregon Ombudsman account in the State Treasury with dedicated subaccounts for the specific ombudsman offices, and declares an emergency effective on passage. We do have the fiscal. The fiscal requires further analysis, and the revenue has no impact.
So, Madam Chair, I suppose it makes sense that if you replace a 25-page bill with a 70-page amendment and you somewhat change an agent, drastically change one agency and involve multiple others, that your amendment might not be perfect the first time around. So what we're attempting to do from the last several conversations we've had is still the same. We're working out a number of glitches. We're going to take another whack at this to try to get the proper groups in the building, DOJ, DHS, everybody together with LC. There are multiple minor things that add up but are important. Things like we neglected to point out that the Foster Child Ombudsman and Foster Parent Ombudsman both need to be mandatory reporters. There's things along those lines that are very fixable, but we need to take another whack before it's ready to move. So, I mean, you can ask, there are people here who can talk about it, but as far as I know, we all think we need to take another look.
Any statements for the record? Nope. Okay. Good. Well, we are going to carry this over till April 18th at 8 a.m. Give it as much time as it needs before we send it on. We would like to really try to clean up our bills as much as possible before they get sent on.
Thank you.
And then at that point, if it still needs a little more work, hopefully that can happen in the Joint Ways and Means. So I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2170, open a work session on House Bill 2002. Taylor, please come on up. Cassie will read the official summary, and then we'll get it perhaps in more lay terms from you.
House Bill 2002 specifies procedural requirements for property owners participating in federal housing programs with expiring contracts, including notification 2 years prior to contract expiration and payment of replacement or relocation fees for tenants. The bill establishes civil penalties for violation of the provisions and requires property owners of publicly supported housing to offer Oregon Housing and Community Services the opportunity to purchase the property before third parties. The bill allows individual action to recover damages for loss of money or property caused by the property owner failing to give notice or comply with expiring publicly supported housing contract procedural requirements, and clarifies and defines terms including publicly supported housing. This applies to participating publicly supported housing properties on or after the effective date. We have a -2 amendment. The -2 amendment replaces the bill and defines publicly supported housing as multifamily rental housing development of 5 or more units receiving or benefiting from government assistance. The amendment requires the owner of a participating publicly supported property with an expiring or terminating contract to provide notice to local governments and OHCS 2 years before the contract expires or terminates, or the property is withdrawn from publicly supported housing. The amendment requires property owner to extend affordability restrictions on the participating property by the number of months in noncompliance with notice requirements, and allows local government to request a local subsidy program to be included within the definition of publicly supported housing. The amendment allows OHCS and the local government to require payment of tenant relocation fees from an owner of a participating property, and allows individuals to bring action to recover damages as a result of the property owner failing to provide notice. The amendment requires the property owner to provide notice by mail with a return receipt to OHCS and the local government of the opportunity to offer to purchase participating property 13 months before withdrawal from the publicly supported housing, and specifies procedures and requirements for OHCS or the local government to purchase the participating property. The amendment requires the property owner to provide right of first refusal to OHCS and the local government when accepting a third party's offer to purchase the participating property, and specifies procedures and requirements for exercising the right of first refusal. The amendment requires OHCS to maintain data on publicly supported housing and is effective on the 91st day following signee die. We have the fiscal. The fiscal requires further analysis, and the revenue is minimal, and we got a request from LFO to send it to Ways and Means.
Great. Okay. Well, I will do my best to summarize those lengthy amendments, not to keep you here too long. So, for the record, my name is Taylor Smiley-Wolf. I'm here on behalf of Speaker Kotek to walk you through these amendments. Chair Kenegaier, members of the committee, thank you so much for having me. So I want to say a couple of words about why this bill is needed to reflect on the Speaker's previous testimony before jumping into the amendments. So first, this bill is part of the Speaker's three-pronged approach to addressing the housing crisis. The first piece of that is tenant protections. The second piece was increasing the supply of both market rate and affordable housing. And then the third piece is preservation, which is what this bill helps to do. In the midst of a housing crisis with a severe shortage of affordable housing, it's essential that we don't go backwards and lose the affordable housing that we have. So we believe that House Bill 2002 with the Dash 2 amendments give us some new tools to preserve the properties that we've made such significant public investments in. So with that, I will go ahead and go through the first two major policy pieces of the bill, and then I'll hand it over to Rob to talk about the second two. So surprisingly, the definition of publicly supported housing was challenging to reach, but it's really important, and we made some changes from the first version of the bill. But properties that are considered publicly supported housing are those that are subject to the rest of the bill and include multifamily rental housing that's five or more units. And these housing developments have to have received significant rental subsidy. So they have to have a rent contract, a contract with either OHCS or the list is before you in the summary that I gave you, but HUD, USDA, or OHCS for rent assistance. So if a development has a contract for lowered rents in exchange for significant public subsidy, it's considered publicly supported housing. We also wanted to clarify the properties that are not subject to this bill. So a number of properties are exempted from the definition of publicly supported housing, and I just want to touch on a few. So properties that are part of an inclusionary housing program are exempt. Properties that receive or landlords who receive Section 8 vouchers are exempt from this bill. And then also developments or developers who receive only a construction excise tax waiver, a system development charge waiver, a fee waiver, or a property tax abatement are also exempt. So you have the exemptions in front of you, but I wanted to highlight those. And if a property is publicly supported housing, the owner is required to provide 2 years' notice, as Cassie mentioned, if they plan to take any actions that will result in the termination or expiration of the property as a participating property in publicly supported housing, which just means the ending of the affordability contract. So we don't want owners to have to notice if they're going to take an action that will not result in the termination or expiration of the contract. So maybe they're selling to a new owner, but the new owner plans to continue the affordability restriction. So in that case, the property owner does not need to notice or provide opportunity to purchase or right of first refusal, as Rob will explain. So I'll hand it over to Rob and then take questions at the end.
Good morning, Chair Kenegaier, Vice Chair Sanchez, and Vice Chair Olson, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rob Prash. I'm with Network for Oregon Affordable Housing. Thank you, Taylor, for introducing the amendments. I was just going to talk briefly about the opportunity to purchase, and this would occur when an owner proposes to withdraw their property from publicly supported housing. Mm-hmm. In this case, they would provide an opportunity to Oregon Housing Community Services or their designee to offer to purchase the property. A couple of important details about that opportunity to purchase. Oregon Housing would likely appoint a designee after consulting with the local government that would execute that opportunity to purchase. So the agency does not intend to take ownership of these properties. They will pre-qualify local organizations that would do that. Keep in mind that the property owner is under no obligation to sell the property and to accept the offer to purchase. And once the notice of opportunity to purchase has been made, the owner is required to provide certain information about the property that's relevant for the sale. And again, this notice, this section will apply only to properties that are planning on withdrawing from the publicly supported inventory. Section 7 introduces a right of first refusal. under which Oregon Housing, the local government, or their designee will have the right to match a purchase offer that's been received by an owner from a third party. Provision would apply only to new projects going forward after the effective date of the act. I think Section 8, I think, has already been talked about. That addresses enforcement that's within the bill.
Yeah, and then one other piece I wanted to note was that the bill directs OHCS to maintain a database of publicly supported housing as well as the affordability restrictions and where they are in terms of their potential expiration to provide better information to the legislature about the need for funding for preservation and just to keep a better tap on all of the properties that are out there. So that's a section as well.
And I'd like to add a little bit about that. That's really a critical component of any preservation program. Having that information about the inventory. Oregon Housing hasn't done a great job maintaining an inventory of the state's affordable housing properties, but they have prioritized this in their strategic plan, and they will need the support of the legislature to implement some of those information systems improvements and hire some additional analysts. So.
Thank you for bearing with us, and happy to take questions.
And I just say that the part of the housing audit that we discussed in the fall before many of you came on to this committee did highlight that as a real area of much-needed improvement. And so I'm delighted that this is doing that. And thank you, Rob, for your years of working in the private, not-for-profit sector, trying to do what you can to pull pieces of information together and have the database that we have. And I understand that a lot of the work that you've been doing will be kind of merged into ongoing housing and community services, so it's going to be institutionalized there. We really need the state government to keep a central database on this kind of information. So thank you for your years of work on this. You've got a great reputation on it. Any questions for them? Okay. All right. Then may I have a motion, please?
Yep. Madam Chair, I move to adopt the -2 amendments dated April 6, 2017. Mm-hmm.
Vice Chair also moves to adopt the -2 amendment dated April 6, 2017. Is there any discussion on the amendment? Any objection to the amendment? All right.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 2002 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation that the bill be referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee.
Vice Chair also moves House Bill 2002 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be referred to the Joint Ways and Means Committee. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative
Borsig?
Yes.
Representative Meek?
Aye.
Representative Newman?
Aye.
Representative Noble? Excuse.
Representative
Felusa?
Aye.
Representative Stark?
Yes.
Vice Chair Olson?
Aye.
Vice Chair Sanchez?
Aye.
Chair Kinder?
Aye.
Motion carries. Close the work session on House Bill 2002 and open a work session on House Bill 2433. It's Representative Parrish's bill. Cassie, could you please summarize the bill?
House Bill 2433 directs Housing and Community Services to establish a housing co-location pilot program with a school district building low-income senior housing on school district property. The bill limits rent to a certain percentage of the senior's income and requires classroom assistance from the senior. The bill establishes the low-income senior housing co-location fund and appropriates money to OHCS for construction costs of the housing pilot program. The bill sunsets January 2nd, 2021, and declares an emergency effective on passage. We have a -1, and the -1 replaces Section 1 of the bill and directs OHCS and the local school district to develop and implement a school district and low-income housing low-income senior housing co-location pilot program to increase affordable housing for low-income seniors and provide additional classroom assistance to participating school districts. The amendment directs OHCS to adopt rules to implement the pilot program, including specific rules regarding selection of school districts, selection of affordable housing providers, rent limitations, and development of a wait list for applicants. And the amendment specifies that the pilot program application requirements for the school district and low-income seniors. We have both the fiscal and the revenue, and both of them require further analysis, and we have a sub-referral to Joint Ways and Means.
Ariel, I'm going to do my best at describing it, but I hope you can come up here just in case there are any questions. So as you may recall, this is Representative Parrish's bill. I'm going to put it in lay terms here, that allows a school district to build affordable housing on their property with the intention of having young seniors, 55 and olders, volunteer their time in the classroom. And OSEA came up and testified and said, we have a lot of people who work part-time who might be really excited to be able to work in the school, live nearby, and add some volunteer hours. It asked OHCS to develop some of the guidelines, and in the process of that, my understanding is that OHCS said it would violate, I think it was the Fair Housing Act, to put into statute that they have to volunteer in return for housing. There's something that maybe Ariel can explain better than I can, but it's a kind of a servitude kind of thing. And I know there are other organizations like NEA, where Vice Chair Sanchez works, that have done some very innovative work, like the NEA Generations Project, where seniors get affordable housing in exchange for volunteering. But they have to volunteer to do it. It can't be a demand. So they volunteer with foster families. Same with Bridge Meadows in North Portland. And Bridge Meadows is opening up another similar project in Beaverton, where people can live in low-cost housing. And there is an understanding that they will contribute to the community. But we can't put in statute that it's a hour for, you know. So maybe you can explain that. Also, you needed to clarify things like the process, how people will apply, since it asks you to do some things. So if there's anything you would like to say to us about the Dash One Amendment, or if there's anyone here that has any questions about it, this is your opportunity.
Chair Kenny-Geyer, Vice Chairs, members of the committee, thanks for giving the agency a moment to weigh in. Just with the advanced timeline, we just saw the amendments last night, so haven't fully vetted the changes, but I think they're starting to get us there. The issue was as...
Oh, I'm sorry. Name for the record.
Oh, I'm sorry. Ariel Nelson, Oregon Housing and Community Services. As you explained, Chair Kenny-Geyer, the issue was that under federal fair housing, you can't require any kind of volunteer activity or work as a condition of tenancy. So at first look at the amendments at the dash ones, it looks like that gets us out of that situation. It now is providing preference, and we just need to fully vet that information. It also took out the requirement that OHCS or a school district conduct a background check. There's a HUD guidance that says you can't have a blanket background check policy. It has to be an individualized assessment. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of language we want to leave to leasing documents, that the affordable housing provider would take care of that. We do have a few remaining questions on the language. It's silent. It removed the language that put OHCS in a landlord or screening role. That's not something the agency currently does. That's typically handled by the affordable housing provider. The bill is silent as to who builds or purchases the property, which we want to make sure that enables our current existing process for selecting a provider to build a property and to act. It does designate an affordable housing provider as a property manager, which is the appropriate role there. But we're just vetting the language, but it looks like it's removed, the dash one's removed most of our major concerns.
So we can, yes, question.
thank you, Madam Chair. What was the school district's role in this, or how were they contacted or discussed or involved?
So we have not. We've just been working with Rep. Parrish, and I also haven't had a chance to confirm with her that the dash ones still are in keeping with her intent behind the bill. She had expressed in our last meeting that she wanted that, you know, in terms of the fair housing concerns, her idea was that the rent would be, the volunteer participant would receive a credit, and so it wouldn't get to the fair housing portion. So that's in there. The school districts, to answer your question, Rep. Paluso, we have not been in touch with them. The way the bill's written right now is they would apply to OHCS, we would have an application process, and they would come with, you know, identified piece of land. It's not explicit in the bill, but, you know, with our typical program, if we were to fund a project like this, like the examples that the chair mentioned, typically we have a housing developer, and they'll partner with a nonprofit who's has a history of providing services or reaching a specific target population that they want to reach with that project. So
in this case, the school district would probably come with an affordable housing developer, possibly a nonprofit as well, who does this kind of housing. The bill is kind of silent to that process. From our first look, it looks like that's something we could do in rulemaking to enable that, but we have not had a chance to connect with any school districts. I haven't heard from anyone in that role.
Thank you.
So, committee, I'm going to look to you and have an informal discussion before we make any motions. My intention is to move this to Ways and Means. We can either try to give you and Representative Parrish a chance, since the amendment just came back, to take another stab at it, because I like things to move out of this committee as cleanly as possible before the next part. I also know that they're very backed up back there, and so we could let the amendment happen in the next stage and not throw it into the crunch style, this crunch here. So just going to look to you informally for some direction here. I know that you were particularly passionate about this, Rep. Nierman. Do you have a feeling about whether to try to take one more crack at it before Friday the 18th, or pass it on and work on it and take off the time pressure?
I'm disappointed by some of the federal stuff that's pushing the bill around, but we have what we have.
That's what we have.
So, but I like your idea of Ways and Means is backed up, so that gives us some time to work on it. So let's work on it.
So leave it here until the 18th?
I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So I am going to carry over House Bill 2433 to April 18th, 8 a.m. Close the work session on House Bill 2433. And before we adjourn, I want to point out a couple bills that we're going to be hearing on Thursday, so you can pay particular attention to them. Representative Noble's not here, but I know Vice Chair Olson was also interested in Representative Boone's bill, 2930, requiring notification to military regarding child abuse. I think she's been working on that very hard. You might, Representative Stark, also be involved in that. And we also know that she's been out a lot because of her ailing husband. So anything that anyone can do to kind of move that conversation along would be much appreciated. House Bill 2661, which is on the long-term care referral agencies, we've made enormous progress. It's a they will be registered, not certified or licensed, but registered with DHS, so that we know for the first time who out there is doing this. We think there are about 75 companies. With that, we'll be kind of a gold standard, and we'll go over this more on Thursday. But background checks, disclosure statements, things like you can't refer to a facility where you or someone in your family has any ownership in it, no self-dealing, things like that. I think it's just really a great coming together. Not all stakeholders got what they wanted, but there's a lot of good things in it. One of the big decisions, and these will be reflected in the -7 and -8, we'll have a really big decision here to make. And so I'm really hoping that you all, and I've kind of walked through it with my vice chairs and asked them to talk with members of your own party about the decision that we'll have to make, which amendment to go with. So one of them, and I forget which number is associated with what because it hasn't come back yet, but one of them is going to be if a first referral agency makes a referral, right now, like the big internet company, for instance, A Place for Mom, has 2 years. They have the name and the medical information, and they give out a number of different facilities. They refer facilities, and then for the next 2 years, anytime that patient shows up at any of the facilities that were on that referral list, the facility pays A Place for Mom, the referral agency. So that might happen in the first placement, and if the person has to move to a second placement because they weren't happy or they have a greater need, a stepped-up level of care, Place for Mom is paid for. So one of the amendments would, and some people felt, well, that's a long time to kind of hold on to a name. So one of the amendments that was offered by Place for Mom is what we kind of are calling one and done, which means that after the first placement, when they've then recouped their costs, after the first placement, then a person can say, I no longer want to be I don't want you to be my referral agency. I want to go to something else. So that's called the one and done. It's so it's a slightly more opportunity for the consumer to go with the kind of referral agency that they want than we currently have. So it's a milder step forward. The other one is a complete right to rescind. It gives the consumer at any point in the process the ability to say, I don't want to work with you as a referral agency anymore. I'm going to switch to another referral agency, which means that then that first referral agency will no longer get compensated by the facility that the person goes to. So it's considered a, you know, it's a farther step along in terms of the continuum on consumer protection. And so I've tried to talk this out with my vice chair so that that you all can have individual conversations. I invite you to talk to the different players in it, the groups that are here in Oregon, the kind of smaller boots on the ground kind of groups, have been pushing hard for the right to rescind. And some of the groups that are the internet-based, call it caring.com, Place for Mom, and I'm not sure if there are others, but those are the two big ones, are arguing for the one and done as this would actually be the first in the country either way. So we're actually taking a much deeper look at this than most states have done. And so it's a big decision. So I really invite you to talk about it with the people involved in who are representing the referral agencies as well as each other. And I know Mark Meek has thought a lot about it. I think Ron Noble has been very interested in, and Vice Chair Sanchez are the three that have probably tracked this the closely. But I know that Vice Chair Olson has also had conversations with me about it. Yes.
Madam Chair, thank you. Do we know when the amendments will show up on OLIS? They're not on there yet.
Nope. Hopefully today.
Okay.
We submitted them on Friday, and they're trying to turn them around as quickly as possible. And once the amendment is up there, the fiscal will still take a little longer. And then I'll talk about the fiscal. It's not enormous, but there is a small fiscal, and so I'll talk about that on Thursday. And those will be part of the amendments, too. Okay. Any questions before we adjourn? All right, we're adjourned.
Thank you.
All right, we're adjourned.